Well, perhaps some of you found yourselves like me up in the wee hours of Thursday morning last week, witnessing something that no human being had seen in 108 years. I speak, of course, of the Cubs winning the World Series. Yes, we can applaud. Let's applaud for the Cubbies. Now, it was a great game, capping off a great series. And it's with great relief that I stand here today because, of course, we heard people saying things like, well, if the Cubs ever win the World Series, the world is going to come to an end. But here we are. We have survived. The threat of existential doom has passed, and we can rest easy. Or perhaps not. Yesterday morning, I went out to get the Wall Street Journal, and I saw on the paper rack another newspaper, one that gave me pause, one that informed me the end is near. Now, we can read yesterday's Boston Herald in a number of different ways, perhaps just with a sense of relief that a presidential campaign that seems like it's been going on since, well, 1908, is finally about to stagger across the finish line and come to a conclusion. I don't know about you, but I won't feel too lonely once all of the phone calls stop coming in at dinner time. But maybe we should look at this headline in the spirit in which people often hear these words. The end is near. What image comes to mind? Perhaps it is the fellow with slightly wild hair and even wilder eyes wearing a sandwich board, pacing the streets of the city, informing us that the gig is up and the penny is about to drop. Maybe we are indeed on the precipice of the apocalypse. Given some of the things that people are saying about this Tuesday's contest, who knows? This is a big election with high stakes, and people have invested a great deal of themselves in their positions and their candidates, from the president all the way down to the register of deeds. Now, as your pastor, I am not going to tell you from this pulpit for whom you should vote. Aside from the fact that that would violate the terms of our 501c3 charitable status, we have a congregation of varying political viewpoints. I feel my job is to encourage you to think about how you will bring your faith into the voting booth. And I will say that I believe as Christians, we have a duty and a vocation to vote. And when we go into that voting booth, we are called to bring our faith in with us. The constitutionally mandated separation of church and state is not the same thing as a division between faith and politics. If we are indeed people who follow the way of Jesus, who confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, we don't get to add a but to the statement. There is no asterisk. We don't get to say, yes, my faith will shape my vote, as long as what the gospel says happens to align with the position of my candidate. If we're serious about being followers of Jesus, we do not have that option. Not there. Sorry. And sometimes that means we have to let go of some of our cherished beliefs, our political positions, so that we can bring our values in alignment with what God would have us do. Now, as I've reflected on this electoral season, this week's lesson from Haggai came to mind. On Wednesday morning, we as a nation are going to wake up, and tens of millions of people are going to be excited about the future, and tens of millions of people are going to be convinced that we are on the fast track to hell. What do we as Christians have to bring into this environment? What kind of witness might we be able to offer to one another and to our community as we grapple with the question of now what? Well, we can look at our current situation here in the United States of America in 2016 and find all sorts of things to complain about. But if you really want to have cause to grouse, then I invite you to contemplate the situation of the people of Jerusalem in the fall of the year 520 BC. We can actually date this morning's reading. Thanks to the follower of Haggai, who actually wrote down his prophecies and dated them. There in Jerusalem, the population had been restored to its homeland after exile by the Babylonians. The Persian king Cyrus, about 18 years before, had said the Jews could go home. They could rebuild the temple and the city. But almost two decades on, the dream had turned bitter. The people had to deal with water shortages and drought and crop failure. They had to deal with the Sumerians who were hostile to their presence. And there was the reality that while they were given self-governance, they were not independent. They'd had one big project: rebuild Jerusalem, reestablish the temple. And that undertaking had run out of steam. It ground to a halt. And it was at that moment that the word of the Lord came to Zerubbabel, the governor, and to Joshua, the high priest, and was recounted by Haggai to the people. And basically, the word was, get off your keisters and get to work. Now, Haggai recognized the malaise that was afflicting the people. There were those who were talking about the first temple and how wonderful it had been. But he asks a very, very pungent question. How many of you remember how beautiful it was? Well, the odds are there wasn't anybody in that crowd who'd ever seen the first temple. The people had been exiled 66 years earlier. When you consider the average lifespan in that day and age, anyone who'd been around was probably dead. So the people who were talking about that wonderful past, that beautiful structure, were operating with secondhand and thirdhand information. Everything became rosier and more wonderful and more perfect. And a very strong human impulse to dwell in the past seized some of the people. The past is an amazing thing, and history is something worth studying and looking to for guidance and appreciating. But Haggai knew and wanted his fellow citizens to know it is not a place where we can live. Not an option. We are here in the present. And we have to look to the future. God had made a promise to his people to be with them during times of privation and challenge and loss and hardship. And Haggai did not want the people of Jerusalem to lose sight of that. He calls on the governor and the high priest, the leaders of competing power centers of different factions, to lay aside their differences and to unite around the common good. He reminds the people not to place their hope in human institutions, but ultimately in the promise of God. Zerubbabel was descended from the Davidic line, and Joshua was of the priestly caste. Their ancestors had served as king and as high priest. But now they held their roles by the sufferance of foreigners. Do not place your trust in human institutions. Take them with a grain of salt, Haggai told the people. And remember who is in charge. And this is why the rebuilding of the temple was so important to Haggai, because it wasn't a symbol of the nation. This wasn't a civic building project. But building the temple would be a statement by the people of Jerusalem, of Judah, that they had confidence in God's promises, that they believed God wanted to be present among them. It was a vote in the future, one that would be shaped by their God. Haggai was fully aware of all the problems and challenges facing his people. And he could see how everybody would look at all of the challenges they had, of the resources that weren't available. And he told the people of Jerusalem, trust in God, and we will be able to make our way forward. I think this word is as important for us to hear today as it was for the people of Jerusalem 2,500 years ago. Some people in our congregation and our community will be pleased with the results on Tuesday night, and others will be disappointed. Our job as Christians is to try to call people together, to try to find ways that we can work together on the challenges before us. Not to nurse old grudges, not to live in some supposedly perfect past, but to look at the moment into which we have been called by God. And then with confidence move forward into the future, knowing that God is with us. So with all due respect to the clever headline writers at the Boston Herald, I do not believe the end is near. Perhaps we're turning a page, but we're moving forward. And as we contemplate now what, the question is, who will guide us? What will lead us? How will we set our priorities? Let us keep the words of Haggai in mind. And if we do so, then I believe we can move into a future that is shaped by God's hope and God's grace and God's restoring love.